for the touch of your lips, dear, but much more for the touch of your whips, dear. You can raise welts like nobody else as we dance to the masochism tango.
Tonight on the show, it's Gulliver Travels in Hell with the 1987 horror kids movie, PG-rated classic, The Gate. Hillary is here.
Hey, guys.
Woo! Tonight we're exploring Canadian neighborhoods and a lot of little demons. I love the fucking weird claymation stuff in this movie. Like, I really... It's funny, like, revisiting this film as an adult as opposed to being a child. Now, this was, shocker, a first-time watch for you.
I don't know how. So, okay, we all know I don't know anything. I just have feelings and opinions. I'm just a dangerous person walking around in the world, right? Nothing in my world is based on fact. So, I have been telling people about The Gate. Like, I put The Gate on the spreadsheet for us to do of all the movies that I want to do. Like, you know,
This was actually one of your picks.
Yeah, yeah, totally. However, apparently I have been thinking about the movie The Howling. So when I... Yeah, no.
No, that's a thinker.
Yeah, they are not even remotely in the same genre. So when I sat down to watch The Gate... thinking I'm going to watch The Howling, and it starts, and again, you know, I give a movie about 20 minutes before I'm like, huh.
Yeah. 30 minutes into whatever that Batman documentary was before you realize you were indeed not watching the movie you wanted to watch.
Yeah. And I just went, I don't think I've ever seen this.
That's amazing.
And then I started, you know, taking my notes and like watching, and then fell in love with this fucking movie, put my foot down, and my notes just stop. So we're just going to see what my brain comes up with during this episode. Stay tuned.
See, and I love that. I love that. Some of the best episodes come from that. So we got a slightly chunky pre-Blade, pre-vape ad, Stephen Dorff.
Yeah, little baby Dorff.
Little baby chubby Dorff.
Cheeks. Oh. Just adorable.
Just adorable. Like fucking like 3'9".
Yeah.
Just tiny as fuck. And what's funny about this is that I, just like you, went a good portion of my life thinking that Stephen Dorff was just a total douchebag because he kind of plays douchebag roles and he's kind of got a douchebag look and he did those douchebag vape ads.
I did get the impression that Stephen Dorff was just going to like suck in real life. No, again, just... based on thoughts and feelings.
None of which are based in reality, by the way. But in actuality, I've talked to quite a few people in the business, and they've said that he is a real stand-up guy. He's really cool. He understands that a lot of his movies later on are what's referred to as paycheck movies. He did this really cool fucking movie, if you can find it, called Break, where he's locked inside the trunk of a car with a cell phone, trying to figure out how to get out, and it's like a terrorist thing, and it's really fucking good, because you think, like, dude walked in a car, like, I'm probably not gonna follow that for very long, but he does a really good job. And he's also in season 3 of True Detective, which, from what I heard, because season 1 of True Detective is so fucking good and season 2 is absolute trash, season 3 comes back to the original formula and is actually pretty good. So I heard him on a Marc Maron podcast thing, and he was just a cool dude. So I'm like, all right, I stand corrected on my Stephen Dorff is a douche stance.
Yeah,
you should say that. It's kind of a slow burn.
Yeah, and I just kept going, like, everybody is raving about this. Go back in, watch it. And then by the time I could actually get through it, loved it. Then did season 2 and was like, meh. Interesting take on that. And then season 3 redeemed it, but overall I am a season 4 girl.
Okay, when now I've just heard season 4 is Jodie Foster. Excellent. Okay, it's great. So in the so the opening of this movie is actually a dream sequence.
Yeah.
And we see things like a treehouse. We also see a really badass Canadian neighborhood, which I see, the thing about it is, just Canada, once again, better people than we are, and probably better shit, everything else. But we see this like dream sequence where little baby Steven Dorff is
I just have that he's just walking through the house and like it looks like he's looking for his parents, and it looks like an abandoned house, like that people left in the middle of the dinner.
Yeah. Like, yes, that's right. Yeah. And so it's interesting. This movie has a very, that's a great word, because I was trying to figure out the sort of the atmosphere of this film, because there's a thing that I really love about this movie, which is the atmosphere is very almost uncomfortable in a lot of ways, even though it is this traditional suburban neighborhood. But it seems deserted.
Yeah. Very deserted. Like there are really no people there. Even though, like, the sister has friends, he has a friend, but...
But it literally seems like they, like, it's two houses in the neighborhood that are occupied and everything else is gone.
Yeah, like, randomly there'd be, like, somebody in, like, a back corner of a screen, but you have to look for them. It feels very deserted, hopeless, bleak town.
Yeah.
Like, nuclear holocaust and this thing.
Yes! Yes, Night of the Comet.
Night of the Comet.
Okay, yeah. Now we've captured the atmosphere. Can we talk about how huge that yard is?
I mean, I had a yard like that growing.
Did
up.
You?
Yeah.
My yard. I don't know. I bet if I went back into Brandon and I looked at like yard, my yard probably wouldn't have been as big as I remember it to be. But I remember having like a pretty substantial backyard.
Yeah. No, we had my. Like school, my elementary school I could walk to was technically like in my backyard, and we just had woods that I would walk through to go to school in the morning. And I was obsessed with digging holes in the backyard.
Wow.
And I would put chairs in the holes and read, because it would be cooler. So I wanted to be outside.
Much like Angus the doggy.
Yeah, like... The
full circle, baby.
I did not see this as a child. This could have been my Roman Empire.
It's so crazy because it's like there's all this shit that is like parallel to this movie, but you haven't seen this movie till you're in your 40s.
Right. I'm just like, oh my, what was I doing? Well, clearly watching The Howling.
And so they're doing what I think is tree trimming, but I think it's also like tree clearing.
Yeah, they're getting rid of stuff. I don't know what is really happening in the backyard, but like...
There's workmen.
There are workmen, and little baby dwarf is obsessed with rockets.
Yeah, he's obsessed with rockets. We meet his best friend, Terry, who's like... basically like the nerdy kid who lives next door with the fucking like metal patches and the glasses.
He grows up to be Skippy from Trick or Treat.
Okay. Yes. That character would grow up to be Skippy from Trick or Treat. Yes.
It doesn't end well for him.
Yeah. Exactly. Lewis Tripp. I don't know if he, I know apparently there's a sequel to this movie, to The Gate, and I've never seen it. I don't even think I could find it if I tried. But in that movie, Terry is now the main character, and he's like, you know, older. Not by much, but like teenager, kind of teenage. Because at this point...
Going through this twice, though?
Yeah, I know, right?
What's the luck, you know, that you had to fight the demons once with your best friend? Now, like, man, I feel bad for Terry.
Yeah, poor Terry. And then at some point, a geode drops from the tree.
Yeah.
Yeah, very, very, yeah, very the blob.
And then they dig it out of the hole and they're trying to hack it open with like a chisel and a hammer.
Yeah, and I'm like, because I don't really know much about, in the sense of like how much geodes are worth, but I think, I think the only like frame of reference I have is Creepshow, when Stephen King brings in he's like, well, I bring in that geode and I'm going to get all kind of money. And that's exactly what I think these kids are doing. They're like, I think you can get like $50 for this thing, right? So they're digging in the yard for more geodes and unfortunately accidentally unleash the gate to hell.
Yeah, I do hate it when that happens. I do hate, this would have made me dig so many more holes in my backyard.
What's interesting about this is that this was also a time period. So this is 1987. This is prime time for Satanic Panic. So this is very much a PG family film related, but also with like little bits of satanic panic.
Yeah, definitely bits of satanic panic. FYI, I found the gate too. We can stream it on the Roku channel.
Oh, it's on the Roku channel.
Uh-huh. Oh, just right.
That's another fucking $5.99 I don't have right now. We meet his sister Alexandra.
Alexandra. Right. Don't call me Al. Right. My name is Alexandra.
Don't call me Al. I'm Alexandra. Is going to throw away. She actually has a big box of his stuff. And she's like, I'm throwing away this rocket because you haven't claimed it. And you're not going to, I think what she was supposed to clean up the mess or something.
Yeah, she was tasked with cleaning something. I'm thinking that huge bedroom sized hall closet. And I really feel like in traditional older sister fashion, she took everything that was his, said that it was clean, and just threw it away.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah, absolutely. I'm throwing all this shit in a black bag. Yeah. Sorry, partner.
Closet's clean.
Yeah. Closet's clean. And she's going to be 16 in 2 weeks.
She does not look 16, but okay.
Yeah, yeah.
She actually looks younger, though, to me. Which...
She does. Oh, no. Yeah. She does look younger. We're going to talk about the pajama scene in a second.
Oh.
Because that was like, what in the fucking underage girl am I looking at right now?
Yeah. And then part of me wonders, like, did anybody catch that? Did anybody think it? Was it intentional? Or, because, you know, it's a kids movie. It's adults putting out a kids movie, so make it appropriate.
Yeah. That's the thing. About this is that thankfully this movie doesn't veer into, oh my god, you can totally tell a dude wrote this movie territory. Like, it doesn't get sexually inappropriate, thank god. There's not even so much as a makeout scene in this film.
Yeah, no, even in the, you know, my parents are away, I'm gonna throw a party, like, nobody's dry humping in the corner.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Not this is the tamest fucking party I have ever seen.
Yeah, for somebody who's about to be 16. I did. I thought she was like 14 years old and her friends were older, like, kind of thing. The fact that she had this like party where really nothing, and there are way too many people in the house, obviously. And, you know,
apparently it's funny because this house is, oh man, I love this fucking house. This house is so 80s. It's like the way that it's got like the slanted, like sort of like the vaulted ceiling kind of thing. It's got like the stairways in the right place. Like, it's very 80s, right?
Very 80s, very geometry everywhere. No, you know, who just has walls when you can have a weird angle that you can't put any piece of furniture in, decorate appropriately.
Right.
Love
not,
it.
Not disability friendly, I'll tell you that.
No.
If there was a Mac and me situation, like, we would be so fucked.
Don't invite your grandfather over. He is a walker and this is our house.
No one's getting out. Okay, so what these parents, can we talk about the fucking, now this is an 80s trope, you know, the absolutely clueless white folk parents.
Yeah, nailed it with them. Absolutely love that. But they are so 80s suburban mom and dad.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know? Dad, I mean, really just needed like a martini or a cigar, like one vice, you know, like, and it would have been absolutely chef's kiss.
But literally like no vices. Like, what's funny about this is we've got, first of all, I don't know what the casting situation was. Maybe this was just what Canada had to offer at the time. But can we just talk about Glenn, by the way, Stephen Dorff, Glenn's mom and her fucking red fro hair and her yellow earrings just sipping her wine.
Yeah, she was great. I definitely feel like all of us had the worst hair in the 80s. Every single one of us. If you had good hair in the 80s, you were a total nerd.
Yeah, I think exactly. There was a lot of like frizziness.
Frizzy. Perm on top of perm.
And that is indeed the look that Glenn's mom is going for.
Yeah. And, you know, so much bleach and Aquanet and teasing and crimping. Like, just so processed and overprocessed. Like, healthy hair did not come in till like 96.
Which is why they came out with a product called VO5 Hot Oil, which was supposed to repair all of the damage people did in the 80s.
Yep. Yeah, they were so close. Oil, yes. Let's not keep adding heat to hair. Yeah, yeah, but they were oil, yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. So we've got that situation. They've decided to ground Glenn because Glenn has dug a hole in the it's kind of a dumb reason to ground your kid, but he's dug a hole in the yard and they're not happy with it. So they've decided to ground Glenn. They're going out of town for some indiscernible amount of time. Like, I think it's a weekend.
I think a weekend. Yeah.
So, and Glenn's not allowed to leave the house the entire time that his parents aren't around in the 80s without cell phones or cameras. Now, keep in mind, I'm pretty sure Glenn's like 11.
Yeah, he's in double digits and definitely obviously younger than his sister, who I guess is turning 16. But yeah, he's double digits, 10, 11, 12, I could even do. He is middle school.
Absolutely. Okay, so we get that part of it. And then Terry apparently tells Glenn that at some point in time there were workmen working on the house when the house was being built, and one of them died and then got sealed inside the wall.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, did you not do that with your friends? Like, just try to scare the shit out of each other?
Yeah, come up with weird shit.
Yeah, that happened in your house or on this street, and just like the ghost store. This made me so nostalgic. I do remember literally trying to scare the shit out of my friends and saying things of just like, oh my God, this, like meeting a new friend, going to their house and being like, hey, I didn't know that this was your house. Did you live here like your whole life? And it's like, no, I just moved in recently. And I'm like, oh, did you not hear about what happened in this house?
Right, right. Yeah, just weird shit like that. Like, yeah. But there were always, you know, there were always like these tales, these like things that you hear growing up that you don't even know. Like, were they real?
Yeah.
Were they not? Did some older kid make it up? Was it an actual killing that happened in my town?
Right, yeah.
To this day, I don't know.
No, nobody knows. I do think that a lot of the times it is just passed down from like, you know, movies, TV, overhearing your parents' conversations, things on the news, and, you know, your brain just has this natural ability to just put pieces together and a story is built.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I totally get it. And what's funny is that, so he tells his dad this story, right? Glenn tells, he's like, well, Terry said there's a fucking workman and he got sealed into the wall. And his father's like, remember when Terry's mom died?
Yeah. Oh, God. The dad and son heart to heart in this, so fucking good.
Oh my God. And then he's like, yeah. And he's like, well, you know, Terry's got a lot of problems.
Yeah, just kind of your friend is batshit crazy. Like, I'm here for your buddy. Thank God your mom's not dead. You know,
exactly. Like, thank God your mom didn't die. And apparently Terry's got some undiagnosed grief issues that he needs to deal with, which should be real easy now that his father just goes off on fucking business trip.
Right. Yeah. Just
like, first of all, can we talk about Terry's house for a second? So it's interesting because there's this contrast, right? Whereas Glenn's house kind of feels like a family. Yeah. It feels like a home, right? And Terry's house is like surrounded by garbage and old food and like shitty dishes. And then there's just a sign on the door. There's like a sign on the refrigerator that just says like, went on a business trip, you know, good luck.
Yeah. Yeah. Best of luck, homie. You know, beer in the fridge. Like, you're 11.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good luck and Godspeed.
Right.
And it's funny because like the one rule, you know, is like no parties, but also keep the dog off the furniture.
Keep the dog off the furniture. And also, you are not allowed to leave the house this weekend, young man. But your friend is allowed to come over and see you, which I thought was so typical, like, 80s cool parents.
Right, like, Terry can come over and hang out and spend the night. Right. But, yeah, exactly.
You guys can't leave. And right. I was just like,
cannot leave the premises.
Yeah. And as soon as I saw their dog, we'll get there.
Okay, but yeah, now just trigger warning-ish, okay? Because, you know, doesthedogdie.com kind of thing. There's like kind of a fake out here. So I don't want anyone to stop watching this movie when things happen, because it's okay. Like, I'm just telling you it's okay. I will say this. when I saw this as a kid, I didn't have a dog growing up. We had animals that my father, rest in peace, happy Father's Day, by the way. He had a really like disposable view of animals where if we had a pet, we would wake up the next morning and the pet was gone. And we'd be like, where, what happened to Mittens? And he would be like, well, your neighbor, Jeffrey, really liked Mittens, so we gave Mittens away. Yes, that's an actual thing that I had to deal with, was waking up not knowing if I was going to have a pet or not. So, as an adult, you know, in my 40s, when I got Murphy, you know, it just changed my heart to a point where I was like, oh my God, I totally get why people have animals and pets and the love and the loyalty and just that, like, I would take a bullet for this dog and shit like that. So when Angus shows up in this movie, man, I am just like, I'm like, you better not fucking kill that dog. Like, just like, don't kill the dog. Like, my heart dealt with this movie in a totally different way than it did as a kid.
My heart is dealing with that story about Mittens right now.
No, that's a thing.
Yeah, I'm going to have to put that on shelf because, yeah, rest in peace, Dad. But I would like to have a little chat with you.
Seriously, yeah.
But what I was, again, back to how nostalgic this movie was, I thought it was like Sprocket from Fraggle Rock.
Oh, yes, he had total Sprocket vibes.
Yeah. And And as soon as... I guess the dog's name is Angus. It's Sprocket in all my notes.
Right.
And
that's good.
I was just like, oh my God, it's fucking Sprocket. And Talon looked over at me and he went, who?
Oh God. Oh, the
Sprocket from Fraggle Rock. And he went, oh yeah, the Muppet. And I just went, no, Sprocket was the dog.
Was Sprocket an actual dog?
No.
Oh, Sprocket was a Muppet.
Yeah. Oh. But no, we fought about that and then I had to look it up. So I missed the next 5 minutes of movie.
We had to rewind.
Yeah. And I was just like, you are so fucking wrong. It was a dog. And he was just like, that was a Fraggle. That's why he could find the Fraggles. I said he could find the Fraggles because he's a fucking dog. And then I had to backtrack and go, yeah, you're right. And he goes, yeah, no, I didn't know his name, but I knew what the fuck he was.
Oh,
I was like,
man, that's amazing.
And I make it seem like that was a heated moment in our relationship.
Right, yeah. Hashtag couple goals.
Yeah. It, again, we're fine. That's how we fight.
Don't call anybody. It's fine.
Right. Black in my eye.
No, in this party. So at this party, there's a lot. Dude, there are so many popped collars.
So many popped collars.
And crimped hair.
And high crimped hair. Holy Aquanet. And, you know, the hot boy senior that is a...
It is Eric? Like...
Yeah, sure. Who fucking cares?
I think his name is Eric and he's really not that hot.
But again, she is a freshman in my viewing.
Right.
So she's 14 and I was just like, oh yeah, no, I get it. Very 16 Candles-esque.
Wavy brown hair.
Yeah, wavy brown hair, brown eyes. He looks like he should be in The Last American Virgin.
Oh God, yeah. Can't wait to do that on the show.
Yeah, that's...
So Glenn and Terry are up in their bedroom avoiding the party, like you would, and... They bust open a geode and then, okay, what is this toy called? It is not an Etch-a-Sketch. It was like a toy with a film and you moved picked up the film and then the picture would disappear. And it was also like you could draw, like you drew like a beard on the guy and
yeah,
stuff like that.
Yeah.
No idea what it's called.
No.
Absolutely not.
But when I saw it, I was just like, oh, yeah. But you would only get like 3 drawings out of that. And then the film was stupid.
The film was completely stupid. Yeah, totally stupid. So this toy, not an Etch-a-Sketch, decides to basically, God, what would it, how shall we put this? A satanic phrase, symbol, whatever appears on the not an Etch-a-Sketch.
Yeah, the not an Etch-a-Sketch toy. That we don't know what it's called. But if you were alive in the 80s, you had one. Because, like, they came in fucking cereal boxes.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, no, yeah. This was a thing. This was absolutely a thing. And it, I think it had, like, a little pen.
Yeah, a pencil that, or a sharp piece of plastic.
Or, I'm sorry, a stylus, as you millennials call it.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, so the kids decide at some point to go downstairs. I'm not really sure. Maybe they're hungry. And there's a really weird girl, like really weird with like weird braids and all kinds of shit. And she's like, we should play the levitation game, which as Hillary and I know it, light as a feather, stiff as a board.
Yeah. Why does that work? Can you explain it? Because I've played it and it fucking works and I can't figure it out.
I mean, the only thing I could possibly think of is that you were in such a meditative state as just laying very, very, very still that you become very, very light. And, you know, just the slightest, like, lifting kind of, like, moves you up. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. I don't. It's always bothered me, but not enough to, like, do anything.
Look it up.
Right. Yeah. If only I carried something in my back pocket that had access to all the world's knowledge and I could look up things that I wanted to know instead of just posing questions to you.
Like in the middle of an episode.
In the middle of an episode where I'm just like, hey, can you explain the science behind this?
I get it.
What we do here.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Nothing but science and facts.
That's right. So they're lifting Glenn up. All these teenagers are lifting Glenn up, and Glenn starts to levitate to the point that he actually hits the light fixture.
Yeah, no, he goes on a journey. Like, we never got that high, but I mean, so they pick, and then, you know, little baby dwarf and Terry just kind of like freak out.
Right. And then he crashes. Right. And then Terry's like, hey, man, it's OK. Because he felt bad. He's like, Glenn cried, basically, because I would fucking cry, too. If I was fucking 11 years old and you levitated me and I hit a light fixture and it burst and then I fell in front of a bunch of people. Yeah, I'd be crying. And Terry's like, remember the time I vomited after the 12 minute mile? OK, so this brings me to a story. In gym class, did you guys have the thing where you had to, like, run the mile in under a certain amount of time?
Yes.
Okay. Because mine was, it was supposed to be a 10-minute mile at my school, and I think I ran it in, like, 14. because I am not athletic.
Yeah, we had to run it in something, but I was able to do it in the amount of time, but it was between the two guys, yeah, no, I'm going to fucking name them too. Mark Zaro and Eddie Scallion. Ooh. I'm close. The
That's
last
a great
name. Yeah.
Eddie Scallion actually sounds like somebody that you would have to, like, get money from.
Scullion. It was you. Oh, yeah. Scullion. Yeah. Okay. So, and the two of them, I mean, it was trash talk and banter. And I, like, they would just take off, and I was really just invested in who was going to win that.
Wow.
Yeah, that was, okay. I could do the mile in whatever the time frame was. I could do zero pull-ups ever.
Oh, yeah, no, I still can't do a pull-up, dude. Yeah. I have great guns. I'm very proud of my body. But, dude, my upper body strength is trash.
Yeah, cannot do that. But I gave everybody, like, a run for their money for sit-ups.
Really?
Yeah, my core used to be fucking on point.
That's amazing. Yeah. I love that for you.
If you were picking a let's do sit-ups team, I was going to be one of your first picks.
That's great.
Never happened.
I love it. I love it so much. All right, so we talked about the pajama scene. So let's just paint you a picture. So, when girls are of a certain age, sometimes we like to, like, stand in front of the mirror and kind of see, like, hey, have I grown boobies yet? Or, oh, I really want to be a woman. Very similar to the scene in 16 Candles where Molly Ringwald is kind of, like, you know, rotating her shoulders and looking at herself kind of. And she's like, you need 2 inches of bod and a good birthday, right? Okay. So there's a scene where Alexandra decides that she's going to, like, pose in front of the mirror, as you do. But here's the thing. She is wearing the most childlike pair of pajamas I have ever seen. Now, perhaps Canada hadn't caught up, or that was all they had at the fucking costume table.
Yeah, she... So, I understand... Because, again, she's 14 when I'm watching this.
Right, right. Exactly. Yeah.
So, like, as 14, I just went, like, okay, like, you haven't bought new pajamas yet. Like, you are, you know, your pajamas still fit. We're not wasting money on pajamas. Kind of, like, all of those things. And it is shot like a, this is what you would do.
Absolutely.
With your girlfriend.
Right. Not inappropriate. Here's the thing. This is, like, I'm just trying to, like, get you guys, don't worry. This is not a problematic scene. This is just a, wow, they chose a very immature, childlike pair of pajamas for this blossoming young woman who is kind of trying to check out her body in a mirror.
Yeah, I am going to, again, thoughts and feelings, that's all I live with. I am going to choose to believe that the scene was just shot for actuality, and if you are a person that watched that scene and made it gross, then that's...
You're fucking gross!
Yeah, then that's on you, and the scene was shot the way girls fucking are.
Absolutely. No, this is a thing, dude. This is absolutely a thing. This is a thing that we, as women, have all done at some point.
And I still do it, where I'm just, like, in the mirror in, you know, like, my booty shorts and just going, like, oh, man, I, you know, wish that my glutes were bigger. You know, I wish I could give some titty to my ass, so, you know.
Right, yeah, no, that's a total thing. Meanwhile, Terry has a creepy dream about his mom.
Oh, justice for Sprocket.
Oh, man. Okay, yeah, so in the dream, just stay with us, guys. Stay with us. Okay, so in the dream, also, the mom's hair in this dream is like, she's got like the Howard Johnson's hair, you know, it's just really rough. He goes to hug his mom in this dream, and then he realizes that he's actually hugging a dead dog.
Yeah, he gets woken up, and Sprocket is dead in his arms. And I can honestly say that if I had a slumber party and my friend hugged my dog to death, we would not hang out the next day.
Yeah, that is kind of... Right, like, it's almost, like, did he give him, like, a mausoleum hug? Like, was it, like, a fucking, like, was it, like, a bad bear hug and he killed him? Or...
Right.
But Angus was, okay, so how did Glenn put it? Like, Angus is 99 in dog years.
97.
97. You're not taking notes.
No, I just, I liked the number, you know. If he had picked, you know, 84, we wouldn't have remembered that. But
yeah, but 97 apparently was good.
Yeah. Yeah, I like prime.
Yeah, that's good. So that obviously, so Terry goes home, and, you know, we see his empty house full of just, like, garbage, basically. And he goes up to his incredibly boss bedroom.
Yeah, boss fucking.
Love it.
Yeah, I'm telling you, he has the bedroom of Skippy from Trick or Treat before Skippy moves into the basement with his, like, new mom who's gonna love him and take care of him. They are the same fucking characters.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, like, every time it was a scene with Terry, I was just like, oh my god, this is Skippy from Trick or Treat.
That's amazing!
That's what we're doing.
I love it so much. And then he's listening to... Okay, so back in the day, kids, we used to have these things called albums. They were called LPs. LP stood for long play. And we had them and we played them, and that's how we listened to music. So he opens up his LP, and there are liner notes that are bananas.
Yeah, I was like, what an amazing collector's edition from Sacrifice, spelled, you know, F-Y-C-E at the end. And I was like, I hope this is a real band. Again, not doing any research, but I hope that there is an album. Because, like, the cover opens, it is liner notes with, like, the lyrics and what this all means. And this is how we can raise the dead. And, like, so Satanic Panic.
Yeah, dude, it's very Satanic Panic. And the inside of these liner notes, I swear to God, looks literally like Evil Dead's Book of the Dead.
Yeah. Like, smaller, though.
Smaller, but definitely, like, it's crazy, right? So then Terry basically begins conjuring Satan in a rainbow blanket.
What? Very gay pride all of a sudden.
Right. Happy pride, by the way.
Yeah, happy pride. If you have noticed some satanic things, it's because Aaron and I just watched The Gate during Pride Month.
So we're sorry.
Yeah. Sorry, not sorry. The dog's going to be okay.
Yeah. So... So meanwhile, I guess the two sisters who are Alexandra's friends come out and now look. Okay, I know I ask you this every episode, and I know you're just like, "What the fuck?" Right? Okay.
Yep. Get prepared for it again.
Did you recognize either sister?
Of course not.
Okay.
I do think that we do this for the fans.
We actually do at this point. Yeah. No. This is
Do you think Aaron's gonna ask Hillary?
Right. Hey, did you recognize this person in this scene? And Hillary's gonna go, I never recognize anybody motherfucking ever.
Right.
Stop asking. So
no, but keep asking.
So the funny thing is,
I'm gonna blow you away.
All right. So the funny thing is, and I recognize this in like the weirdest way. But one of the sisters that is a friend of Al's was actually the mom on the Fox TV show The OC.
Oh, I never watched that.
Yeah. No, actually quite good. Comparatively to what it is. But it was actually quite good. It's like a teen drama.
Like 90210-ish?
Yeah, pretty much. Like a teen drama. Great music. But written in a very witty, highly more adult way. So, like, obviously much more geared towards adults, in my opinion.
Okay.
Yeah. But totally dug it. So, yeah, it's crazy. So that happens. And the fashion that the sisters bring to the table could best be described as if Swatch Watch had a fashion equivalent.
Yeah, very good reference. If you had a Swatch, especially what I've noticed
in 87,
or if you were one of the blessed few to have the 6-foot Swatch watch that hung on the wall.
Oh my God, you're taking me back.
I wanted one so fucking bad, and my dad was just like, I mean,
does it tell time?
Yeah, he was like, I mean, I'll just buy you a clock if you, and I was like, no, I don't want a clock. I want the 6-foot Swatch watch. And it was really one of like the few times that my dad was very like, you know, I will get things for you that you want for your birthday or for Christmas. I was very fucking blessed. Amazing dad. And just, this was one of those things that I was like, I need this. And my dad was like, I don't know what the price tag was.
Oh my God.
But it must have been something so obscene that my dad was like, I will just buy you a clock. And I was like, we're not living in the same universe, Dad.
Unless it's the hot pink flamingo clock that used to be in like everybody's room at that time.
Yeah, very, you know, I'll totally buy you a clock.
So much neon.
Yeah. But yeah, so those girls probably had the 6-foot Swatch watch and they dressed like it.
Absolutely.
They are a walking fucking Rubik's Cube.
It is wild. So Eric, the sort of attractive teenage boy, agrees to take dead Angus in his Firebird to the vet, ? But it's like a Saturday?
Yeah, it is.
Or maybe it's a Sunday.
It is definitely the weekend. And he is just carrying dead Angus.
Can we just talk about the fact that he has him... He has him under his arm like he's carrying a football.
In a comforter.
It is like he's carrying just like a piece of luggage for his wife. You know, like very hold my purse while I go shopping. I don't think I've ever laughed at a dead
dog. Actually, I did laugh really hard at that.
Yeah.
It is so fucking like... He might as well have, like, slipped on a banana peel. Like, this shit was so fucking funny.
Oh, my God.
Just so...
Oh, shit.
80s Firebird car comforter. Like, oh, just throw him in a knitted Afghan and slip on a banana peel and put it in Weekend at Bernie's. It was...
Just carrying around a dead dog that you're going to puppeteer later.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
So he rides by the vet, and he's like, shit, closed. sorry, dude, and then decides to throw the dog into the gate of hell,
yeah,
a hole, and cover it with a wood pallet.
Yeah, obviously. Just nothing suspicious here. Driving around with a dead dog, no worries. Are there other cars on the road? Maybe.
Yeah, no, that's the other thing. Like I said, totally deserted. Like, clearly the vet's not even open.
Yeah, no, like, we have a town, but we're going to try to go in it to do anything, and nothing's open. And so, yeah, I'm just going to throw this dead dog in the hole in the backyard with the, you know, magical geodes that sacrifice is warning the kids about. So fucking good.
It's so fucking good. Okay, so at this point, Terry shows Glenn this book and says, you know, this is a Bible for demons. And this band that I'm listening to, and no, I did not bother to find out if this is a real band, but they all died in a plane crash. And there is a shot inside of the LP which shows them like levitating somebody, and it is hilarious.
Oh god. So many just random scenes are gonna make you like cry laughing.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's not, I mean, the thing is, like, we're not, like you said, we're not taking the piss out of it. It's obviously dated to a certain point. This was the time of satanic panic. This kind of shit was everywhere. This was a thing that was happening all the time for us as kids. So yes, he does carry around the dead dog, but when he carries that dog's corpse around, he's carrying it around like he won it at a local fair.
Yeah, like he won it for like the ring toss.
Like a giant teddy bear under his arm.
Yes, like, I won this for you, babe, by getting the ring over the electric fucking swirly wire without electrocuting myself. Oh, the anxiety-ridden games we play.
It's so nuts, right? So Alexandra, I always want to call her Allison. Al comes back from the mall with the two girls, and she brings Glenn a rocket, and they actually proceed to set the rocket off in the yard.
Yes, yes, they do. The Thunderbolt?
Yes. I wasn't familiar with, I don't remember much rocket action when I was a kid. I don't think that was really my thing necessarily. I did like chemistry sets.
I liked microscopes.
Oh, nice.
Okay. Yeah. Rockets were around, like, I know, you know, friends and like kids in the neighborhood like had rockets, whatever, but they were always like, you know, you have to play with them with your parents nearby because, you know, an open flame. But so yeah, none of us did of that. And all of us still have our eyes, I believe.
Yes, exactly. I believe. Yes. And the girls decide they're going to have a slumber party. And
I love that the girls
fell asleep listening to their Walkman.
Yeah. Didn't you? Like,
yes,
yeah.
I love it. But there's so much fun 80s kitsch in this movie.
Yeah. I do wonder what they were listening to, if it was like, you know, Debbie or Tiffany.
Oh, yes, exactly.
Or
there was
the Bangles.
Like, oh, who, yeah. Madonna, who was in the Walkman? Right. We'll never know.
Right.
Girls probably a little too tame to be listening to the Go-Go's, because the Go-Go's, what I love about the Go-Go's was the Go-Go's were like cute and bubbly, but they were dirty as fuck in real life. Like, they were guzzling, druggy, fucking everything that moved, but they were cute and bubbly, and that's what made their music cool.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, the Go-Go's were tight.
I was a big Go-Go's, like, between the Go-Go's and the Bangles, I preferred the Go-Go's. I'm a Go-Go's fan over the Bangles.
Oh no, I was the Bangles.
You were? Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Shannon. Was it Susanna Hoff?
Yeah, I was like, oh, Shannon.
Like Shannon Hoff?
Yeah. Me and Shantown.
Right.
Yeah.
We know who the fuck that is, right? But so we see these, like, I'm not really sure what happens at this point. I think everyone's going to sleep, and then little Claymay demons show up.
Yeah, they were amazing.
So adorable. And what's funny about this is that it was partially claymation, but on the close-ups where they were, like, pulling people's clothing and, like, trying to bite people, they were actually men in suits shot forced perspective.
Huh.
I know. Really cool, right?
I was wondering how they did that, especially in 87.
Yeah,
just cool shit, man. And also, there's a moth infestation.
Yeah, well, why wouldn't there be? It's hell is coming.
Yeah.
Wouldn't there be a shit ton of moths if the gates to hell opened?
Like a special kind of like Canadian moth.
Yeah, I mean, if you know, the gate to hell in the Buffyverse was in Canada and not Sunnydale, California, she would have had moths.
Maybe that's a thing. Yeah. And then there's monster hands that try to pull Owl under the bedroom, under the bed.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that was such a fun scene where it. So there were moments in this where I genuinely like had like a fright.
Oh, like, yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah. Cause I don't play around with fucking like things under my bed or things under my car.
Yeah. Or in the back seat of the car. Yeah. Just things of that. And so, yeah, the monster hands from under the bed, like made me like pull my feet up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Right, like, yeah. I'm totally, that's, you know, when I watch, especially movies, you know, from the 80s, like, I'm gonna play along. We're now in this situation, and what does, you know, like, 14-year-old Hillary do? Right. And it's never good.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's pretty wild. And then, at some point, so at this whole point, like, Glenn is just like, I want to call mom and dad. Like, yeah. He has been repeating this, and Alexandra's like, no, we cannot call mom and dad. I'm like, I think it might be time to call mom and dad, really. Yeah.
And I do find it so interesting that he doesn't just go call mom and dad.
Right.
And not like, oh, no, I'm not listening to you.
No, he actually listens to his older sister.
Listens to his older sister and is like, oh, okay, yeah, well, we won't call mom and dad. Because I would have called mom and dad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for fucking sure.
Yeah, we have opened demons, the gate to hell is open. Monster. The dog is dead.
Dog, like, so much has happened. And if my older sister, who I followed like a fucking puppy dog, if she had said, like, we're not calling mom and dad, I would have been like, oh, okay. And I would have walked away and called mom and dad.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Now, here's a moment in this movie where I think PG rated my dick is when the parents, like, sort of come home and then the dude's face just falls apart.
Melts off his face.
Dad's like, you've been bad, and then his face melts, and I thought to myself, I'm like, that is horrifying.
Yeah, no, that would have scared the fuck out of me. And also the scene
with the melting phone.
Not the melting phone. The melting phone would not have scared the fuck out of me. The Alexandra goes back upstairs thinking Glenn is still in bed sleeping, pulls the cover back, and it's dead Sprocket in the bed.
Yes, dead Sprocket in the bed was horrible. Did you catch
the, I would have lost it.
Did you catch the family murder portrait on the wall?
I did catch the family murder portrait on the wall, but it was so, like, subtle. Wait,
oh, very quick.
That I wouldn't have probably caught it as a child because I would have been so fucked up from everything else that was going on. I did catch it, though.
And so, apparently there's a Bible within arm's reach.
Yeah. Oh. It was the 80s in white suburban America. Yeah, there's always a fucking Bible.
So they decide that they're going to read from the Bible to try to get the gate to close. And the gate glows purple, much like some idiot that's driving around in Florida.
Yeah.
Like the fucking underneath their car kind of thing.
The neon lights. Look at me, look at me, look at me.
Oh, my God. And the spirits go back into the gate, and Terry falls down basically a rabbit hole, much like Alice in Wonderland.
Yes, he falls into the gate because he doesn't listen to his friend, who's like, hey, don't stand near the edge to the gate of hell. That's probably a bad place to stand. And Terry's just like, trust me, bro, and then falls into the gates of hell.
And then they're like biting him. The little demons are biting him. But I still just think they're cute. I can't help it.
Yeah, no, I did not feel threatened by the 3-inch tall demons. I was just like, wait, is this what opening the gates to hell are? 3-inch tall demons that just nibble on you? We could do this.
I'm into this. I'm totally into this. And at one point he actually tells Glenn to stop reciting Bible passages because you're making them mad. Yeah.
They don't like the Bible. That don't read that to them. You're upsetting them. Can't you see it?
So then Terry finally gets out. There's an explosion, and we think the end. But then, if you look at your Tubi timestamp, I assure you, we have got 30 more minutes.
Yes, and 30 more minutes shall be given.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's funny about this is that when I was a kid, my parents taped Poltergeist off the television. Mm-hmm. But back in the day, kids, we had these VHS tapes and they had a time limit on them. So if the movie ran longer than the time limit on the tape would click out and then you would never get the end of the movie. So until I was in my 20s, I thought that Poltergeist ended when they pulled Carol Ann and Mom out of basically hell and they all woke up in the bathtub and everything. So I thought the end of the movie was just like Jo Beth Williams dyeing her hair.
What a great ending, though.
Like, that was it. The movie would click off, and I would be like, oh, okay, all right.
Sudden short ending, but we're out of hell, and now we're changing our look so the demons can't find us.
And I that's what I thought. And then I got into my 20s, and I realized that literally there was a good 10, 15 more minutes of just, like, fucking skeletons in a swimming pool, a demon stealing, you know, get away from my babies. I mean, like, all this crazy cool shit, right? Had no idea it existed.
I love that story. My dad had a thing where when he would tape the movies, he would then just write something on the label. And for the longest fucking time, Full Metal Jacket was Heavy Metal Jacket. I did not know.
Jacket.
That's what it was named in my house, and I wasn't allowed to watch it.
Right. Because no.
Yeah.
Right.
Which obviously, you know, makes sense now, but I was so wanted to watch Heavy Metal Jacket. And then I got to college and I would go to this video store and I'm just like, I really want to watch Heavy Metal Jacket. And guys, like, I have no idea what that is.
Like someone at like a random video store looking it up for you, and they're like, did you mean heavy metal parking lot?
Yeah, or just heavy metal. And that's how I got introduced to heavy metal, and I was just like, I mean, maybe. I don't know where the jacket came from.
Because
she's just titties.
That's why I didn't want me to watch it. That is a way better story than Poltergeist ends when Jo Beth Williams dyes her hair.
I don't know. I love that story.
So we think the movie's over, but it's not. To that point, the dead workman that they've kept talking about finally comes out of the wall and starts attacking and pulls Terry into the wall.
By Terry. It's almost like foreshadowing from when you said a workman got pulled into the walls and sealed in there.
Turns him into Demon Terry.
Yeah, Demon Terry. Sorry.
And then Glenn realizes that Al and Terry are the two human sacrifices that are needed to, like, completely unleash hell.
Yeah. The whole needs two sacrifices. I don't know why Angus wasn't considered.
I was thinking about that, too, because I initially thought that the fact that he threw Angus into the hole was what started it.
Yeah. But apparently not. No. We make more sense, actually.
Right. Exactly. And then the floor opens up a la 976 Evil. By the way, this better movie.
Yeah, oh, so Jesus much Christ. Better movie. But all yeah, when I was watching it, I just went, we've seen this recently. Yeah, the floor. I said, oh, is it going to turn to ice? Is it going to turn to ice?
I did. I was like, oh, no. God damn it. Yeah. And then a big demon pops up. And my favorite is that he pats Glenn on the head.
Yeah. Like, the demons, I know that they're demons, but they're really not bad.
Yeah. They kind of seem nice.
Yeah. Just very head patty.
Much more fatherly than his actual dad.
Yeah. Didn't leave him home alone.
Right. Good Lord. And then Glenn looks down at his eye and Glenn looks down at his hand and realizes there's an eyeball in his hand and he stabs it.
I was like, oh, you're a thug. I couldn't have done that at 11.
Oh my God, that would have freaked me out.
Yeah, no, we would have just had a third eye.
Right. Yeah. Third eye. Exactly. And then he decides, okay, so the rocket is a symbol of love and goodness given to me by my sister. So therefore, I am going to launch it and kill the demon. Bam, dead.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I didn't understand how he was able to put all of that together.
Yeah, because, like, doesn't he... So, the rocket, I think it, like, won't light because it's fucking windy. You know, demons. And then he, like, figures out there's like a battery powered charger or something.
Right. Like, yeah. There's so much happens in his 11-year-old brain that even 45-year-old me just went, how'd you put that together?
Right.
Like, with a, you just stabbed an eyeball in your hand, your sister's dead, your friend is dead, your dog's dead, your parents are at home, there's a demon in the living room, and you did all of that fucking math? Huh.
Totally, yeah, totally fucking wild, man. But anyway, so demons get destroyed. Everything is cool. It's like the next day. It's light outside. Obviously, the fucking living, everything is a total shambles. And Angus / Sprocket emerges from the closet unscathed, still alive, ready to make it to 100.
Justice for Sprocket.
Abso-fucking-lutely. It was beautiful. And then the end.
And then the end. And then Terry grows up to do the gate too, and then turns into Skippy from Trick or Treat.
There we go. Perfect. Perfect. It's awesome. All right. So that was the gate. It's awesome. You can watch it on Tubi for free. Shout out to Tubi.
Shout out Tubi.
Right up. And we've got many shout outs this week, week rather. And I'm going to turn it over to Hillary for her shout out, because this never happens.
Yeah, no, this is totally not a fucking thing, but it's a shout out for you.
Oh, what?
No. I found a podcast called Buckets of Chum.
Ooh.
And all they do is talk about shark movies.
Oh, that's so sweet of you to think of me.
Yeah, I was just...
Wow, like, Buckets of Chum.
Buckets of Chum. And it was, you know, I mean, I listened to one episode. I don't know them. So if you are listening, I apologize, fellow podcasters. But I enjoyed the episode. And all I thought about was like, Aaron needs to be listening to you.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Thank you. That's so sweet. So yeah, guys, Buckets of Chum, I'm sure, is available on wherever you get your podcasts.
I found it on Spotify.
There you go. There it is. Okay. So next is a friend of the show, Kyle Brady, is currently working at Nerd Out Comics in Tampa, Florida. And he is a really good friend of the show. He did our Piranha episode. He did our Messiah of Evil episode. Really cool guy. So if you want some awesome service and just to hang out, talk comics, talk horror, talk all that good stuff, go visit Kyle Brady at Nerd Out Comics in Tampa. You can look up the address because I ain't gonna fucking post it. And it is conveniently located next to our friends at Viper Video. Go say hi to Shelby while you're there.
Hi, Shelby.
Woo, hi, Shelby. Search up. And last but not least, another friend of the show, Heather Wise, her sister has fallen on hard times. She has started a GoFundMe for her sister. And if you are so inclined to skip that Starbucks and help somebody out who needs help rebuilding their lives, some of us do. And, you know, we are always very grateful for anyone that's able or willing to help another human being, especially in this self-centered world that we live in, please feel free to give whatever you can. I am going to put the link in the show notes. And fuck it, I will also put the address of Nerd Out Comics in the show notes as well. Now, next week, I have no fucking clue what we are doing.
Let's do the Howling.
Okay.
Since
it's,
we talked about it.
We talked about it, and it's happening. My friends, the Howling. All right, you guys, keep it here next Monday. And as always,
stay manic.